interviews contained in this archive were transcribed by Lieutenant Edmund Khanna shortly after a box of audio cassettes and journals were recovered from the ruins of an A-frame structure in quadrant CF7893-2 of the North Central Wasteland in late August 42 PD. Data recovery proved difficult. Despite careful storage and processing, the tapes disintegrated rapidly. As a result, Lieutenant Khanna's early transcripts are all that remain of the source materials. The journals contain fragmented stories, as well as some crude notes regarding the ages, names, and locations of the interview subjects from the tapes. This archive is classified and restricted to personnel below Level 7 clearance. Penalties for personnel accessing archive materials above their clearance level include dismemberment and/or death. In accordance with Section 73 of the New Union Settlement Information Security Act, XC-73. Silentium in Umbra, Colonel Grace Edmonds. Settlement 21, 23-10-52 PD. June. Lowell, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
I come from Big Noise. My parents bought a house near the beach in Lawrencetown, Nova Scotia. That's where I lived for years. Mom and Dad and I. The house was close enough that we could hear the waves crashing on the shore. I would lie on my bed with the bedroom window open at night and just listen to the surf rolling. That sound. It's a sound. It's a very full sound. Full of water and force and gravity and life and impact and action and movement, nature. Full of everything. Full of stuff we know, stuff we don't know. Cosmic and juggernaut and rhythmic and natural. Growing up, I got really used to sounds like this. Constant music. Big noise. Dad bought me some recording equipment for my 14th birthday. So I'd head down to the beach and just let the tapes catch everything. I didn't just record the beach, though. I'd record my friends talking sometimes. When we hung out, Connor, JP, Jane. I'd get Dad to take me to town some weekends when he was working, and I'd walk around the city of Halifax with a recorder on. Sometimes I'd hide the recorder in different parts of our house and leave it running. I'd catch parts of conversations my parents were having, the arguments they had. Mom talking on the phone, Dad snoring on the couch with the television still on. My parents died in a car accident a few years ago now. A deer jumped out in front of them. Dad swerved, the car went off the road. It flipped upside down and they landed in the cove. They weren't able to get out, so they drowned. A lot of car accidents happen when people are almost home. Just a weird fact. The little cove my parents drowned in, you could see it from my bedroom window. But right now, I'm sitting on the kitchen floor in my grandmother's apartment in Oak Trelawney Street, in Dartmouth. Which isn't Lawrencetown, but it's still part of Nova Scotia. Right across the water from Halifax. It's part of Halifax, but it's basically the dark part of Halifax. It's where I'm recording this. My grandmother, she spent her entire life in Dartmouth. Never married, but she had a kid. My dad, and she raised him alone. And then my dad moved out of her house and met my mom when he was going to university. He was studying medicine. Anyway, so my mom, she got pregnant and they had me. We lived out near Lawrencetown. But I'd already talked about all that. When my parents died, I ended up moving in with my grandmother and it was just me and her. But we looked out for each other. Grammy had an aneurysm last month. A stomach aneurysm. I didn't know people could even get aneurysms in their stomach. But she did. And I've been alone for 3 weeks now. There are reasons I'm leaving Nova Scotia. You know how people say you can take a shell and put it up to your ear and you'll hear the ocean? When I drive out there now, out to Lawrencetown, and sit on the beach, I can't hear it anymore. Not like I used to be able to. That full sound is gone. The music's gone. So I sit on the beach, and I try to pretend like I still hear it. Just like when you take a shell and put it to your ear, you don't really hear the ocean. You just imagine you do. You pretend. Your brain lets you pretend that you do. I'm not listening to the ocean anymore. I'm listening to a shell. Because the only sounds that are left for me in Lawrencetown are the imaginary ones in my head. So maybe I just need to find another ocean. Take my tape recorder up with me and just find that real sound again. I could head to Tofino. I could take my grandmother's car and drive there. I could be there in a couple of weeks. There's even surfing at Tofino. There's a whole different ocean out there. Take my tape recorder with me. Fill my world back up again. With real sounds again.
Scott, 36, Halifax, Nova Scotia.
It was very hard. The first day I went back to work at the packaging plant, trying to get back into the swing of things. My body was all fresh and rested and ready to go. All that was fine. It was more my whole mental state of mind. I realize now that I was not prepared. I was ready to go into the place and go to work, but at work, you know how there are sometimes, sometimes you have these down periods? Well, we got around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. First day back, everything started slowing down because we had been working so hard in the morning, and around 2 o'clock, when stuff started slowing down, that's when everything really hit me. I'm talking about the drag of what having a job again meant. Because I was stuck there. I was stuck there with nothing to do, but couldn't go home. Couldn't go home because I needed the hours, you know? The whole reason I was doing this was for the money. Being paid by the hour, so I couldn't leave for that. Wasn't allowed to leave anyways, just in case orders came in and everything picked back up. So I found myself stuck in this weird limbo for a while. This at-work limbo. Never happens to me when I'm at home. That kind of feeling? I think it's because there's always something to do at home. Cleaning the bathroom, or watering the avocado plant, or clipping your toenails. At the very least, you can get away from your house and go for a walk. You can go outside, watch the wind blowing through the trees, or feel the sunlight baking your skin like the crust on a big meat pie. Call a friend on your phone and shoot the shit. You can email somebody. Watch YouTube. When you're at work, though, you have to just stand around and cope with the downtime. Maybe you can try and start up a conversation with some person you just met, but I mean, you don't really care about how many Dalmatians he's raising on his puppy farm, or how his or her neighbors backed into their car by accident, how it's become this whole ordeal trying to get the insurance money to cover it. You don't give a shit that they're bored too. I mean, my coworkers, I don't give a shit about them. Not really. Not underneath it all. I don't give a shit about what they think about our current prime minister. I don't care what they think about the Senate. And I don't want to hear what they're talking about their kids or their bills or nobody around here that's paid enough. I just want to do my work and go home. Get back to my real life. The life that I choose. Feels like a prison scenario sometimes. Well, it is that though. Oh hell, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I understand the big picture of it all. I get that we got to keep these big wheels spinning, this whole society thing moving for some reason, right? What was that reason again? Maybe what we're doing is, by having jobs, by working at these places, we don't really want to be connected. Maybe what we're doing is just dispersing the whole problem of downtime, you know? Like, if the whole thing stopped, if the whole machine just stopped turning, I mean, the downtime you'd be left with that people would have to deal with would be an impossible amount of downtime. Too much downtime. Enough downtime, I don't think YouTube servers could handle it. I don't think the outdoors could handle it. Planet Earth, and then everything would be hell for everyone. The big wheel, the machine, might be our answer to it then, if that's the case. These constructed things, these rituals, are all part of our strategy to avoid maybe this whole thing. Maybe it's all this big avoidance technique, or... I don't know. You caught me in this odd mood, this unique time in my life, in transition. I have a job again, I'm working again. I might not be myself because of it. I should probably just shut up and be happy and accept it all. Except no, because I still feel weird, because last week I walked back into a packaging plant, and now everything's different again. How does that happen? What's happening to me? And why am I going back there to do it all again tomorrow? We labor to keep it bound, the beast beneath it all. Thanks for the ride, kid.
Paul, 45, Great Village, Nova Scotia.
We've been out cutting hardwood all day, me and Danny Lavoie. It was late in the season, and we'd both been so busy that year with other stuff and stuff at work. It was a good year for construction, but both of our homes had wood furnaces, so we were behind, and both of us too proud, of course, to pay for someone else's reserves when we both had quality wood lots of our own. When the cutting was done, chunks of maple and birch piled everywhere, it was getting around near six. The sky was turning orange and pink, and we knew we were going to run out of daylight. So we started chucking wood quick as we could into the back of the pickup, this GMC Sierra I'd had since my father had willed it to me, this old model he'd bought in the early 80s. And me and Danny, both of us old enough that we were starting to feel the fatigue of the day's worth of work on our muscles and bones. Got the truck loaded up, jumped into the cab, turned the key, and nothing. Turned the key again, and nothing. So I reached behind the seat, grabbed the claw hammer, got out the cab, crawled under the thing, and started banging away at the starter. I had Danny sit in the cab to keep trying the ignition. Thank Christ, after about 15 minutes or so, I managed to knock the thing in just the right place. Danny turned the key, Sierra roared to life, strong as anything. Just needed a tap in just the right spot. When we got back to my place, I parked the Sierra and told Danny to go home. We could unload the wood tomorrow. We cut enough for the winter for both our houses. We could do all the work and moving on Sunday morning. He was as tired as me at that point, so that was all good and fine. I went into the house, and Sarah was watching Counter-Strike with Christopher Plummer on CTV. There were leftovers in the fridge from the past couple of days, so I heated up some beans and some lasagna and brought it into the living room and ate while she snuggled up beside me. This had kind of become our routine at that point. I'd come home from working, she'd already be watching TV. I'd cook something and we'd eat together, or I'd catch up on mine and we'd watch TV together until the late night news came on. When the news came on, one of us usually would be falling asleep. And when one of us started falling asleep, the other would wake the other up and we'd throw the dishes in the sink and brush our teeth and head upstairs to bed. When we got into bed, that's when we'd talk. Usually about things that we'd found funny that day, or stuff that had happened to one of our neighbors, or about whatever it was that was worrying us at that moment. And so this night that I'm thinking about, this night I was trying to fall asleep, my blood was tired, and ever since I'd turned 48 or so, I'd have trouble staying awake for these late night sessions. But Sarah, she was at me about something that was worrying to her, something that was annoying to me, because I didn't have no answer for her about it. And the night before, I'd fallen asleep on her when she was trying to have this conversation with me. And, well, because I'd gotten away with it the other night, I figured I could get away with it this night, too, and just kind of fall asleep on her without talking about it, I guess. Something about destiny, whatever, destiny and death or something. But then she touched me. Not in some kind of over-the-top, exaggerated way like you see those idiot 30-year-old actors in MTV movies for kids. I mean, she touched me in this gentle kind of nudge. In just the right place. In just the right way. And something inside me just snapped. Something just turned over inside of me, and all of a sudden I was awake again. All my fatigue was gone, my mind was clear, and It was like I had had something inside of me all my life that had been sleeping. Something inside of me that had just been waiting for this call. So I grabbed her. Hard, but with love. My eyes felt like flashlights, wide open, and I could see in the dark, and I could smell her. And I could hear her breath so clearly. So many nights before, these things... I seemed to have had these things on mute, or like I had turned the volume down on her, but this night I was aware. She'd kick-started something in me, and so I grabbed her and breathed her in and looked into her eyes in the dark, and then we paused. And then I kissed her, and she kissed me back. And I kissed her harder, and she grabbed my hair, and we pulled into each other. And we wanted each other's weight, and we needed each other's heat, and our clumsiness didn't matter, and our bed didn't matter, and the house didn't matter. The bills didn't matter. The firewood didn't matter. The only thing that mattered to us was us being together. That was it. Was a good night. Next thing I knew, I rolled over and looked at the clock. And the clock read 4:42 in bright red digital numbers. The window was open a crack, and when our panting slowed, we could hear the morning birds waking up in the darkness outside as we clenched each other. And after a few minutes of birdsong and bliss, I started talking to her. And I don't know where they came from, but I had all the answers. All the answers to all the stuff that had been worrying her, all the answers to every question she'd ever asked me, and when I was done, she leaned over and kissed me and fell asleep on my chest. Happy, it seemed. At peace. And I stayed real still and I stayed real awake because I'd always wanted to be like that with her. I wanted to remember every moment what was going to happen next. Because after 27 years of marriage, after all the struggle and bullshit and hardship and distance I had ever put her through, this girl still wanted me. Her nudge, the way she had, that's what it made me realize. That's what brought me back into this life with Sarah.
Harley, 56, Parsboro, Nova Scotia.
Used to be you were supposed to be 18 before you could get your license, but I was 16 at the time. I love driving. I've been driving for 40 years, in my 50s now. Yes, you're getting off lucky. You thought it was your transmission? If it had been your transmission, then you'd be in a pickle, eh? And you'd be stuck here, right in Parsboro. It could be worse. Could have broke down an Advocate or somewhere real off the beaten path. Transmission. It'd take us 3 or 4 days to get a transmission for a Civic. 2001, anyways. Axelo, we might be able to help you. Might got one in the yard, that vehicle we got buried behind Phil Morris's truck, possibly. I got Dave on the loader. Yeah, we might be able to fix you up. Might have a spare axle around for 2001. Being a tow truck driver, well, this job, you meet all kinds of people. All kinds. You get your assholes. You certainly got those. But most people, they can be really nice. That same corner your Civic was on, that same corner across the road last week, this young fella, eh? Took her right off, lost control, totaled the fucking car. Not hurt at all. This guy was a fucking write-off, but he was fine. And you would have been stuck, eh? If it was your transmission. You saw me rolling the thing back and forth while it was in park? That's how I knew. That's gotta be an axle. Guy lost his life down the road here last week, down near Fox River. That was a real mess. Lost his life. He's road, see? Speed. Can't drive him like us old guys can. Even considering that, there have been a lot of accidents on this road lately. More than usual. Not sure what's going on. Yeah, but you do meet some nice people. This gentleman and his wife, and this was years back now, they were up here and their car broke down and they were pretty impressed with me. He told her, once they were down in the States, he told her, "Now look, if anything ever happens to me, you go up there to Nova Scotia and you settle with that Harley." And it was years later and I'm at the salvage yard and who walks in, eh? His wife. The woman. From the years before. She's happy to see me. We have a pleasant conversation. She was a nice lady. By the end of it, she started telling me about Harley, my husband said, and she told me all about it, and how he told her to settle down with me. And so she asked me if I'd like to move with her to the States. And I said, "The States? What about your husband?" And she told me her husband was passed on. And she wanted me to move down with her, eh? But don't get me wrong, nice people down in the States, nice place to visit, nice and everything. But here's where I was born. My father, he told me, Harley, you want anything in this life, you better be prepared to work your guts out for it. That's why I work the crazy hours, see, 6 a.m. to midnight. I don't stop either, eh? I like working. Work ethic, I got a good work ethic. That's why I can always find work, eh? I don't stop. I used to just go from town to town, 10 days working for someone here, then I'd move on. Didn't like staying anywhere too long. I could always find work. One time I was in Ontario, this town, this asshole got pissed off at me that I only worked a week for him. You never get work in this town again, he said. I looked at him and I said, what do you mean? And he looked at me and said, you leave now, you're never going to get work in this town again. So I asked him, well, how do you think you're going to manage that? Never you mind, he said, but you quit now, you'll never work in this town again. So I walked out of his office and crossed the street to this lumber yard and went inside, talked to the boss there, and told him I'd like to start driving truck for him and that this asshole across the street was giving me trouble. I said, can I work for you as a driver? And he said, yes, you can, sir. So I went back across the road to the asshole, see, and I told him that I got a job, and he was pissed. And I said, I'd like my severance pay now. And the asshole said, I'm not paying you a goddamn cent. And I said, okay. So I walked down the hallway and into the secretary's office. I told her that I was ready to move on, and I asked her if I could have my severance check. And she said, sure you can, sir. And she gave it to me. So I walked back into the asshole's office, and I told him I just got my severance check and that I was done. And he asked me, how'd you get that severance check? So I ran out of there, fast as I could, out the door, down the street to the bank, and told the bank cashier to cash a check real quick because this guy had a reputation for canceling checks to his employees. And no sooner had she handed me the money than that phone started ringing, and it was the asshole, asking about canceling the check. It had already gone through, see? And I had a lovely time next 2 weeks working for the gentleman at the lumber company. Yes, he was a nice employer, he was. That lady from the States, she called me again a couple of years ago, asking me if I'd come visit her. Trying to get me to go down, eh? It's a nice place, don't get me wrong. You're pretty lucky it was just the axle. If it was your transmission, then you'd be fucked. You can smoke in the cab here. Now they get nasty about it if there's a lady present. If there's a lady present, that's different. We can smoke now, though. Anything built by man ain't perfect. Nobody on this earth does anything 100%, eh? That's mankind. Don't feel bad. No one in the world does anything 100%. We'll get you back on the road, if we got the part. Shouldn't take very long, if we got the part.
Jim, 28, Amherst, Nova Scotia.
It's just been a quiet summer, you know? I wasn't expecting it to be. I figured we'd be busy. Heart attacks or DUI victims, the usual. We get a lot of joyriders drinking and driving out in this area. A lot of seniors live here too, so, well, you know how it goes, right? But so far it's been quiet, really, which is nice. The spot where we parked the ambulance is out in the middle of nowhere, of course. Side of the road and the trees waiting for the call. They can be pretty long nights sometimes. Well, we're stuck up on the Tim Hortons before we go out there. Me and whoever I'm partnered with for the shift. Bring a book or whatnot, teach up the time. Pretty quiet except for the crickets. Or cicadas. Probably not cicadas, they don't live around here, right? More like crickets. But maybe not crickets. What's the type of insect that makes that noise? You know the one I mean, not the cricket chirping, but the steady, buzzy drone. That sound. Hey, that's a lot out here. I mean crickets too, but also that drone. Crosswords. I got really into crosswords at one point. The last one I tried to complete, I got stuck on this one word. Four-letter word for passion. This was October last year. Four-letter word for passion. Couldn't figure out if they were looking for zeal or rage. I figured it had to be either zeal or rage. The word was situated in this empty corner of the puzzle, and I hadn't gotten around to solving the words around it yet, but for some reason I got stuck on that one. Could not proceed. Then we got the call. A car had driven off the road, hit a tree, 10 kilometers south of us. We responded to the call. She was dead when we got there. She had a baby with her in the car. Baby was fine, crying, but yeah, okay other than that. She hadn't been wearing a seatbelt. She didn't have a head when we found her body. That was meters away. Her eyes were still open. The investigator arrived. He couldn't quite figure out how she got like that. I was the one who found her. My partner that night, Bruno LaPointe, he was checking up on the kid, and I walked into the woods with my light. Her body didn't bug me, but when the beam of my flashlight landed on the rest of her, the light kinda made her eyes gleam at me. Kinda like sparkled. That kinda well. Through me, you could say. I'd seen worse before, but something about that moment, when I first found her and saw her and how her eyes kinda sparkled. Once everything was cleaned up and we took care of everything and run into town and dropped off the body and then back to Tim Hortons and then back out to our parking spot in the trees, Bruno started making these jokes about people losing their heads and everything and dismemberment jokes, you see. There are lots of jokes about dismemberment. How people can sometimes actually lose pieces of themselves. And we make jokes sometimes. When you're a paramedic, sometimes helps us deal with this stuff. It's not the craziest of behaviors for people who deal with what we deal with day in or day out, alright? Like, but Bruno was being kind of relentless with him that night. So at one point, I had to excuse myself to have a cigarette, and I remember hopping out to the ambulance and taking a few steps and just staring up at the night in the sky. Just staring up at the night in the sky and listening to the crickets and cicadas or whatever. And the sky became... In the sky, I could have sworn I could see the crossword puzzle I was working on earlier. Almost like it were a constellation or something. And I could see that empty corner. I could see 72 across. Four blank spaces. A four-letter word for passion. I still couldn't figure out if the answer was zeal or rage. I never did another crossword after that. I don't know why. The drone doesn't bug me so much.
Lori, 64, Olac, New Brunswick.
I'll give you my opinion. Now, it's just an opinion, and if you don't like it, you can just ignore me. Because, you see, what I think is that it's just life as per usual. Someone comes up with this idea. Some entrepreneurial type. Is your coffee okay, dear? Is it cold? I could fetch a warmer. Just take a second. I can zip right over to the counter here and... You sure? So why can't you talk in the interview? Rick Mercer, he talks in all his interviews. Most of the time he talks more than the people he's interviewing. Of course, that's just a spoof show, I guess. Or a fake news show. You know what I mean? Yeah? Blink twice if you know what I mean. Ha! No, I'm just kidding. I'm just giving you a hard time. I'll be good. I'm very good, actually. I'm a very good person. I don't stir people up. I just take their orders and bring them their food and take away their plates and hand them their bills and run them through the cash register. I work a regular week, and I'm very thankful for my work. This job and my life outside of this job with my dog and my husband, and I've always been very good. Because you should be good, you know what I mean? People appreciate it when you're good, when you don't treat them like a you-know-what arsehole. This is life per usual. This is how it works, or how it should work. Everyone should treat each other with respect and... But then, you get these entrepreneurial types, and then one day they might come up with some idea in their head, some crazy new way of how to make money. So they work their butts off trying to get this idea of theirs going, trying to get it off the ground, like a kite. They try and get their kite off the ground. Their kite is their idea, and their idea becomes their company. And so they try and get it off the ground themselves at first. and they gotta run real fast to get it going, you know? To get it up there. Get it up and flying. And it takes a lot out of them, trying to get their kite up there. And sometimes the kite crashes right off the bat, no matter how hard they run, these entrepreneurial types. But sometimes they get lucky. And they run and the kite goes up and suddenly the wind grabs it. And then all of a sudden the kite is flying in the sky, high in the sky. Except now these entrepreneurial types are tired from all the running they had to do themselves, trying to get the kite up in the air. They need to take a break. So they decide they need someone to keep running the kite for them, just for a little while, just until they get their breath back. So the entrepreneur, they hire someone, because now they can. Because the kite isn't actually a kite. It's an idea. It's a money-making machine. And the entrepreneur becomes the boss. And pretty soon, the boss gets tired of taking turns running the kite with his employee. And since they've been running the kite steady like they have, the boss starts thinking, why should I run the kite at all? Jeez, I could just hire another guy and never have to run the kite again and still make all this money. You get what I'm saying? The entrepreneur starts out flying the kite, right? But the next step after flying the kite is taking a step away from the kite. And the next step after that is taking another step away from the kite. And then another step, and another step, and the next thing you know, the entrepreneur is sitting on a rocking chair on his porch over a mile away watching his kite flying in the distance. And his life is completely different from the lives of the people actually flying that blessed kite now. Flying it for him. Weird how it works, right? The guy who started these gas stations, he ain't even alive no more. His sons run the business now. They're the ones who own everything. They own all the gas stations, the restaurants like this one, the gift shops, the oil refineries offshore, all the local newspapers, half of all the forests everywhere, and who knows where they are right now? On their porches somewhere. But I'm the one flying the kite. You get me? I'm the one running that cash register. This is how it is. How it's gotta be. I've been doing this 5 years now. I used to work in a fish plant. You couldn't get the scent of the work off you at the end of the day. You want me to fetch you a warmer for your coffee? I've met my share of pleasant people. I've met some not so pleasant ones too. But I've always been very good.
Vicky, 21, Sackville, New Brunswick.
Hello. My name is Vicky Lawson, and I am a student attending Mount Allison University here in Sackville, New Brunswick. I'm studying music. I'm a cellist, which means I play the cello. The cello is a musical instrument. I'm not really sure what to say. What do you want me to say? You just want me to talk about anything? Okay, well, my name is Vicky Lawson, and I am a music student. I already said that. Did you notice that everything in this town is named after ducks? Like the cafe down the street, the Black Duck? And this bar we're in, Duckies, everything's named after ducks. I mean, I know the town's right beside that big duck pond, marsh, like, whatever, but what is the big deal? Really, what is the big deal? Like, have some originality, people. Have some frigging originality. Not everything's gotta have a duck in its name. Or be named after the ducks. If I ever open up a business here in Sackville, I'm not going to call it anything to do with ducks. I'm gonna call it Vicky's. I'm not gonna call it the Duck Emporium or the Duck Pond or the Pyramid of Ducks. I'm gonna call it Vicky's. I might be the worst person in town you could have interviewed. I don't really have that much to say. I like music. I like playing cello. It makes me happy. The cello is, I don't know, deep, I guess. The sound of it, the sound of deep. Deep and rich and fluid, moving sound, like the ocean. Not like a pond. Not shallow and static and dead and full of duck shit. You stink. I think it's you. Yeah, it's you. You stink. When was the last time you showered? Your hair is greasy. I don't think I could ever do what you're doing. Backpacking, I couldn't do it. I would need hotels if I was traveling. Hotels, showers, and deodorant. Sorry. It is kind of funny, though. You smell like an old sock. What do you think about that? Nothing? You don't have anything to say for yourself. I'll make you crack. I will make you crack. You smell like a duck's rotten asshole. You smell like a homeless guy. You smell lost. You smell like no one has ever loved you. Has anyone ever loved you? Have you ever been in love with anyone? I was in love with someone once. Here, last semester, my third year. He cheated on me with another musician. A percussionist. That little drummer bitch. She smelled like a duck's rotten asshole. She didn't shower, she smelled like a homeless guy. No one had ever loved her before. That's how she could justify it. Sleeping with another girl's boyfriend. He ran off with her. He didn't withdraw from his courses or anything. She was just a passing through, dirty musician. I found out because they left a note. There was a quote in the note. In dreams, the truth is learned that all good works are done in the absence of a caress. It was a Leonard Cohen quote. I don't know what he meant by it, what he was inferring, and I don't care to know. But now I don't know what to think. Of Leonard Cohen anymore? Of Leonard Cohen or of this place? Or of all these ducks? Or of people who don't shower? Or of myself? I don't even know what to think of myself anymore. And every duck, every musician, every person who doesn't shower reminds me of that fact. Eventually. You stink. Did you hear me when I told you that you stink? You stink. But you didn't crack. Good job. You don't smell that bad.
Fortune of Wolves was written by Ryan Griffith. The series was produced by Big Noise Audio Collective and presented by Theatre New Brunswick. The show was directed by Ryan Griffith with help from Jillian Hansen. Recording, editing, and sound design by Matt Carter. Music for the series was created by Counting On Downstairs, with additional scoring by Matt Carter. To learn more about the series and the artists involved, visit tnb.nb.ca or look for the Big Noise Audio Collective on Facebook. This episode featured Kat Hall as the Chief Archivist, Jason McIntyre as Lowell, Devin Luke as Scott Shannon as Paul, Len Falkenstein as Harley, Anthony Bryan as Jim, Elizabeth Goodyear as Lori, and Megan Murphy as Vicky. Next time on Fortune of Wolves.
Lady tells you she's tired of talking to people, then 5 seconds later she's telling you the opposite.
I had a job with a moving company last year. That was great. All under the table stuff, but then the guy who owned the truck threw out his back and became a cokehead in his downtime and never got the business up and running again.
I couldn't sleep last night. Kept hearing these weird noises in the woods.
Like some giant fucking perverted supercomputer.
Proceed with caution, we'd say.
Spend it while you still can.
And you look over your shoulder to make sure your friends hadn't disappeared on you. And, well, you look over your shoulder for the boogeyman, too.